Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the Stream Queens podcast. Woohoo! I'm very proud of us.
I can't believe we made it to 6. It doesn't seem like it's been that
Imagine
many.
Imagine when you make it to 10. My head's gonna fucking explode.
Oh my god.
Where we review horror films and horror-adjacent films you can stream on the internet. I'm your host, Rachel, and joining me today is my favorite witch hunter general, Mars. Today we're going to be reviewing the film Black Death. But before we get started and dig into all of the goodies, Mars, can you remind our listeners what our spoiler policy is?
Fair reminder, our spoiler policy is that we do indeed spoil everything. We don't leave anything out, so if you don't want it spoiled, you should probably stop and then go watch it and then come back. And then we can, you know, be all on the same page. Or you can just listen, whatever your preference is. It's on Netflix. It's pretty good.
Consider yourself warned.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So now we got that out of the way. We can talk about whatever we want. We can decide, does Sean Bean ever fucking survive a movie?
Right?
Like, real question. I don't know that I've ever seen a movie where he does. And I know that's sort of like a meme or like a you know, whatever. But I don't think I've ever seen a movie where he lives.
No, I feel like every time I watch a movie that's got Sean Bean in it, this little imaginary stopwatch starts, you know? And it's just like counting down the time until, you know?
How's he gonna go?
Right?
Is this his most gruesome death?
I think so. At least that I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, Game of Thrones was pretty up there, but this one was worse, I think.
I think in The Island, he gets like a hook through the throat.
Mm.
But I can't remember how gory that is.
I don't either.
Okay. Well, we'll get to it. We're getting ahead of ourselves. We're literally talking about the end of the movie.
I know.
We put up a fucking spoiler warning, so
I know.
If you're still here, that's
on
you.
Our spoiler warning is you have about 30 seconds to shut this off before Sean Bean dies in the end.
Oh my god. So how have you been?
I've been good.
Okay.
It's been 90 degrees in my apartment.
It is so hot.
We don't have air conditioning, and our apartment is 3 humans, 4 dogs, and 2 cats at this point. So that's a lot
Holy
of bodies.
Shit. Wait.
I've been interim in charge of my team at work because my manager's in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
Which is probably not as stressful as my brain is telling me it is. considering nothing out of the ordinary has happened, nor has anything gone wrong. But for some reason, I spend all day like screaming inside of my brain. So that's been good.
That sounds great.
I've been in a holding pattern on moving for about 5 days at this point. So I've been living like a poor college student in their first apartment because I packed all my stuff. It's in a garage. Because I was like, it's tomorrow. And I said that 5 days ago.
You missed Game of fucking Thrones.
Yeah.
That's real shit right there.
I made some sacrifices and I continue to make these sacrifices. And I sit in my sad empty room that has a surprising echo. And it turns out that like when you take all the stuff down, it echoes. Which like, you know, I get that. It's not like I've never experienced a room echoing before. But for some reason, like I walked in and I was like, huh. I haven't heard that echo in a year and a half, but I've looked weird. And Hellbeast has discovered that when she's in the closet, the echo gets really, it's really noticeable. Mm-hmm. And I think she likes the sound of her own voice because she'll just sit in the closet, like face in the corner and just like scream at herself. And then like,
is it like the equivalent of her singing in the shower?
I think so. I think so. Which is like cute, except when it's like 3:45 in the morning and she's like,
less cute at 3:45.
Let me sing you the song of my people.
Oh, no. So it sounds like you've had an interesting week.
I think I generally have interesting weeks. I'm starting to become more aware of it since I've noticed people are like, weird things happen to you. Like, I don't think they're that weird. Oh, but you know, and then.
No, they're weird.
Yeah, it turns out they might be.
So I found out since we last talked, the limit of the amount of bourbon I can drink and that it's a magical drink that I can come back to even after vomiting at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. So we recorded, we do a monthly show on the Splattercast, mm-hmm. Which is another show that I'm like a co-host on or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we're like watching dirty movies together. And so I just was fucking pounding that bourbon like nobody's business. And 6 bourbons, like 3 hours and 6 bourbons later, I was feeling real good. And at 5 a.m., I was feeling real bad.
Yeah. Oh, were you still awake at 5 a.m., or did you wake up?
No, I woke up.
That's rough.
Yeah, it was real rough.
It's rough that it didn't just rock you to sleep and wait until the morning to
introduce it. It rocked me to sleep and then woke me up. But here's the sickest part, is like, I could totally drink bourbon again right now.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't.
Usually, it's a deal breaker. Like, if I eat a french fry and then throw up, french fries are dead forever.
Really? Or,
I mean, like, I can't drink tequila, partially because, well, one, it will lead to fisticuffs, but also because I've thrown it up.
Right. So I can't drink vodka hard. For the same reason.
Right.
Like, the first alcohol I ever puked from was vodka, and I have not been able to drink it since. But bourbon, like, I can't even count how many times I've thrown up after drinking way too much bourbon, and then it'll be like 30.
Bella, she's it's single. Like, I know.
And it'll be like 30 hours later, and I'm like,
it's time.
Yeah, right? I'm like, I don't know, work tomorrow and I'm drinking bourbon again. For some reason, bourbon, like, it doesn't scar me.
It is the magical. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's kind of just like, I'm into it.
It's like fighting with a friend. Like, yeah. You had a fight, you just need to recover, but then it's not like you end the friendship. You just, you know, right. You just need some time apart for a minute and then, you know.
But that time is real short.
Yeah.
Shockingly short.
Yeah. So it's like fighting with a best friend. Yeah. Or at some point, you're like, you know what? I don't even remember what we were fighting about. So stupid.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, that's a perfect description. So yeah, so that's what I've been up to. Podcasting, drinking, and barfing. It's a glamorous life, but somebody's got to love it.
It makes me proud, though, being your
yes.
bourbon Sherpa that you've reached the next...
My bourbon Sherpa.
That you've, like, on your own accomplished the next stage of...
Enlightenment?
Of bourbon love, yeah. Okay. That you've realized that, you know what, it's going to take a lot more than hangover and puking to destroy right. this relationship.
And God, I'm probably going to regret these words. I feel like a bourbon hangover is not as intense as many other... Maybe because it's the only alcohol I drink just straight. Like, I don't mix it with any soda.
Yeah.
I don't, like, there's no sugar except for the sugar in the bourbon.
Yeah, and there's not really that much sugar in bourbon.
That's good. Because I drink a lot of it. So I have a warm-up question. Although, I mean, we're pretty warm. But yeah. I'm still going to ask it because I feel like you're going to have a unique perspective on it. So we watched Black Death, which is all about, you know, there's, like, torture involved with, right. like, the whole witch inquisition
And everybody's
stuff.
Witches, yeah.
Everybody's witches, right, exactly. And it reminded me of when I went to Scotland, and at Edinburgh, you can take, like, these midnight tours. I've talked about it before because it's, like, the ghost tour.
Right,
but
yeah.
Before, it starts in the on the Royal Mile, and then you, like, walk to the graveyard. So on the way, there's a lot of other little things that they tell you about, and it's all, like, a medieval fucking city, which is mm-hmm. amazing. And there's a whole portion of it that's about torture. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm so fucking glad I don't live in the Middle Ages for many reasons. I mean, dentistry alone. But at the same time, like, I totally have, like, a sick fascination with anything about, like, that fuck, like, the Black Plague. Like, I still somewhere have the printout they gave us in seventh grade about the Black Plague. Just totally obsessed with it. And so I really enjoyed that tour. But you spent some time in Salem.
Yeah, well, that's where my bloodline is from right. Salem.
Right.
I'm half Salem.
Oh, shit.
And my Irish side of the family is Salem-based. Like, a few of them have spread out to go to, like, New Hampshire or whatever, but mostly they're Salem. And it's, like, very much like, it's not Boston, it's Salem, you know? So,
right.
So as a kid, we used to go back, like, pretty frequently to visit all the family there. Because we, you know, I grew up in Oregon on the other side of the coast. But, yeah, I'm blood ties with a witch city.
Did you, when you were there, did you go on any of those, like, little tours?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's, like, this famous Salem Witch Museum, which they, have you ever been gone to Salem?
No, or? I really want to, but it's, I never have.
It's really neat because it is one of those, like, really historic mm-hmm. cities. And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, my gosh, the cobblestones, like, they're actually, like, you know.
Like, still, oh, they did a really good reproduction. Oh, wait.
Mm-hmm.
That's some real shit right there.
And, you know, when you walk through neighborhoods, like, a lot of the houses have these plaques up. And, like, people live in them. Like, you can't just yeah. go into the houses, but they have these plaques that are like, this was Governor John Smith's house from 1652 to, like all the houses are historical. People live in them because they, you know, you have yeah. to. You have to, but, like, right. everything, or they'll, like, you know, this lamppost was erected in 1687 to, you know, things like that, and it's really super cool. But then there's always that, like, oh, that's right, mayors lived here who probably burned witches. Interesting. And so we go to the Salem Witch Museum, which is like, it's, I mean, there's a section that you walk through. It's a really short section that tells you like the history of witches and how Hollywood turned them into green skinned and long noses and all this. But before you do that, you go into this like auditorium and you sit in these rows, like seats or whatever. And eventually, you know, when they start the show or whatever, the lights go out and it's all the walls are these like diorama pockets of these like life-size like wax figures, and lights Ooh. Will come on and there's audio playing and it'll tell you the story of the Salem witch trials mm-hmm. and the lights will pop on in the different boxes and it's all the stories, like it starts with like Tituba oh, and shit. Goes all the way to when the girls were like, oh, by the way, we were totally fucking with you. We just, it got to be too late to say anything.
So you know? This is awkward.
Yeah. So, and the first several times that we went, I, my dad had to leave with me because it scared the shit out of me.
That sounds terrifying. It sounds like the setting of a horror movie.
Yeah. It's really scary because these wax figurines, like, they don't, you know, like you can tell they're fake or whatever, but they're, yeah. you know, wax figurines are pretty gruesome looking. Yeah. And they're not like, what's
Madame Tussauds?
Yeah, they're not like the well, like smooth, like looks like humans. Like they look kind of drippy and weird. You know?
They're like not well maintained.
Yeah, and there are torture scenes. And so, like, oh, yeah, because they tell the story there was like, you know, whatever number of women who were accused of being witches, and then like, four men or something, and there's one famous story of this dude that they were torturing by laying him on a table sort of, and then they just added more like boulders on top of his chest.
Yeah.
And they do the part where they're like, do you confess? And then they have, because it's all these actor voices, like there's a uh-huh. narrator, but then they have actor voices for the wax figurines, and it's like this like, more weight. Because it was his famous response that he kept saying more weight because he refused to admit that he was a witch because it would have killed him anyway. So he just kept saying more weight until it crushed his ribcage and destroyed his organs.
Oh my God. Man, humanity is just terrible.
Yeah, the way, some
like,
of these...
Who comes up with ways to kill people like that?
Right?
How fucked up do you have to be?
I know. And these scenes, they're like bodies hanging from trees and stuff. And so my dad used to, like clockwork, had to take me out of there. And then we would just, you know, be in the gift shop. And of course, like, I'd be like terrified in the thing and made this huge scene. And my dad had to like stumble out of the darkness with me. But then once we hit the gift shop, I was just like, oh my God, toys. And like, they didn't, the last time I went was probably honestly only like the second time that I've made it through the whole show.
Really?
Because we didn't go for a long time when I was in my teens. And when we did go to Salem, we didn't go to the museum. You know, it actually had been a very long time. But mm-hmm. of all the times we went as kids, I could never make it through. And so I spent a lot of time in that gift shop.
I can't believe your dad kept going like, okay, is this, he would buy the ticket. No way.
Right. And be like, is this the time? Is this the time we're going to sit through? And I'd be like, yeah, it is. And then, no, it's not. I swear to God, the creaking in your ceiling was accompanied by wings fluttering this time. I heard fluttering.
You know, I don't know if I only notice it when you're here, but it seems like it intensifies when you're here.
I don't like that. I don't like that knowledge. I literally called out that I have blood ties to a witch city earlier.
Well,
so
there you go. I'm picturing some like old crone, like perched.
No, not crone. Crow. Crows are cute.
Should we talk about this week's movie?
Yeah, probably. We've been at it for a while and we have yet to actually discuss.
No, it's okay. Let's do this. All right. So this week I picked the movie Black Death. It's a movie that has been recommended to me many times because anyone who knows my taste in movies knows I love like religious horror. This is not a fantasy film and by any stretch, but it kind of has the same aesthetic of like high fantasy. Mm-hmm. So I guess you could just say it's like medieval. That would be another way to say that. So it was, and I do love me some Sean Bean, even though he always dies. So it was definitely on my radar, but I never got around to watching it for whatever reason. So this was the perfect excuse to finally do it.
Yeah, me too, because it's been on my list for, like on my Netflix list forever. And I just...
Kind of a miracle it stayed on Netflix long enough for us to get around to actually watching it.
I know. I went back through my list because I was trying to pick my movie for next time or whatever. And I was like, oh, I've got, you know, this on my list and this on my list and this on my list. I should go grab one of those. And I went back, and because it was the first of the month, they were all gone because, you know, every month they...
Fuck.
And so I just lost, like... And, you know, like, we talked about this in the very first Dream Queens episode, yes, where we hoard things, and 100%. Then when it's gone, like, I feel sad, even though... Yeah. It was on there for, like, 6 months, and I never watched it. And the minute it's gone, I was like, oh, but I was going to watch that.
And you thought you had it. You thought it belonged to you. It was in your queue. It was in my list. It's called My List.
This is mine now.
Right.
And they were gone.
So why don't we start with a synopsis? So this is Black Death. It's from 2010. It's directed by Christopher Smith, who directed the... Have you ever seen the movie Triangle?
Mm-mm, no.
If you ever get a chance, that is a really crazy movie.
Okay.
It is a total mindfuck, and it's really, really good. He also directed Severance and Creep. So, okay, you want to synopsize this for us?
Yeah, it's the Black Plague, and it's about a monk played by Eddie Redmayne who has strayed from the path and kissed a girl, and he liked it.
Yes, he did.
He's struggling with following God's plath.
Mm-hmm.
Following God's plath. Just coffee right here.
I know. Did you spike my coffee when I was on Earth? Oh my God. It's the heat, dude. It's the fucking heat. My brain is
this
boiling.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I started it off by being like, it's been 90 degrees in the East Bay.
All right. Yeah, so he's... Because he touched the girl.
Right. And, you know, he likes girls. And so he's asking, he basically prays to God for answers and for direction. And then Sean Bean rides up, and Sean Bean he's a knight, right? Who's been hired by the Catholic Church to find a necromancer that's been rumored to be in the area, who's bringing people back from the dead. He's stopping at Eddie Redmayne's church to look for a guide to get him through a swamp. And Eddie Redmayne is like, oh, I'll go because... You know, his girlfriend's hiding in the woods, and he's, you know, sweet, this is my way to... And then they go, and she's dead, and they find the necromancer, and things get real, real weird.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the movie?
I really liked it. I mean, like, I know why I waited so long to watch it, because it just, you know, it's got kind of a slow start, and... I put things on my list, and then that means even that I'm going to have every intention of watching them, but I never will.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad that you made us watch it, because it was really good. And I love Eddie Redmayne, and I love Sean Bean, and I don't know what his name is, but the one dude who survives the village.
Eyebrows?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really liked him, you know, and his weird Prince Valiant haircut.
That hair, dude. I'm so glad you said it. Because I'm usually wig cop, and it's good to have somebody else be wig cop. Because it has the bangs. And the, mm-hmm. it's like,
and it's like, it looks like it's been curled under a little.
It's like a medieval mullet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
I really liked it, too.
And the ending was so, like, I assumed it was going to be like, you know, haircut takes Eddie Redmayne back to the monastery, and Eddie Redmayne is like, it sucks what happened, but either my faith is renewed in God, or I'm going to figure, you know, whatever. Yeah. But instead, he, like, straight up went young Darth Vader and got very dark. I thought of, I can't remember what his name is. But the guy from one of the crappy Star Wars.
Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, but the guy who played him. Not the
child. Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, he reminded me of Hayden Christensen before he turns mostly robot, and he's like wearing all the black and, you know.
Yeah, being all emo.
Yeah. And
emo Anakin.
Things are flapping in the breeze, like capes and hair and stuff, you know. Various things are windblown.
So, as is our tradition, I'm going to begin this review by talking about the end of the movie.
Right.
And say, the end is so, like, it is such a fucking roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. I totally expected it to be, because, okay, so we spoil everything, so I'm just going to go for it. So, like, it looks like she's doing magic, but it's really just her using superstition to make her look like, and, like, her knowledge of like, herbs and stuff to make it look like she's doing magic. and like he accidentally kills his girlfriend, and so it's like this total gut punch ending. And then they take him back to the church and they're like, now he's with God, and I was like, oh God.
Yeah, I thought it was just churchy gonna end McChurchers there.
And so then when it's the twisty twist and he's traveling the countryside just torturing and killing women, I was like, that's so fucked up. Right.
They like committed to
they went all they making went all this in.
Horrific. They were like, we already ripped off Sean Bean's arms publicly. Yeah. We've already shown a lot of like death tumors.
Oh yes, boobos galore. You know,
we've killed a lot of people yeah. in the course of this movie. Yeah. You know, let's just, you know, go big or go home, I guess, you know. And I loved that it ended with this visual of Eddie Redmayne just torturing women because his guilt is causing him to, like, you know,
right.
put her face on every female that he meets. But the voiceover is haircut being like, I like to believe that he's okay. And he's like, obviously not.
He's obviously
like, I
not,
loved that yeah. juxtaposition of the voiceover being like, it's probably fine. Next to the visual of Eddie Redmayne just fine. Burning women alive.
Yeah. And like crazy too, because he's seeing the face of the yeah. witch everywhere.
Like he's
goes.
Been driven insane by his grief and his guilt, and he's really not fine. So far from
no,
fine.
No, he's not fine.
He's literally fine because ending. He's so beautiful.
Is he the prettiest man alive?
He might be. And like he grew the hair out. You know me, I don't do the no. long hair, but I just wanted to like tangle
and weirdly,
my fingers in it.
It did. He has such a pretty face, and yet it didn't go super like feminine on him. Weirdly,
no. It just made him look tougher somehow,
more handsome,
right? And more like
I mean, I wanted to take my pants off when he had a tonsure. How? When does that happen?
It happens once, and it's when it's Eddie Redmayne. But then, yeah, no, he got this really long, gorgeous, curly, wavy
luxurious hair.
And it didn't look feminine, and it didn't look girly, and it didn't look like weird man bunnish. It just somehow looked like masculine and tough and crazy and dangerous, and I was into it.
He would definitely be a good one to have to take care of you in the apocalypse.
And I would let him be evil, you know? This is what, I'm not promoting burning women arbitrarily at the stake, but I'm like, I would let you be kind of a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I would let you get away with some stuff.
I thought it was a good twisty twist, too, that the voiceover was...
Was haircut.
Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
Because, like, the movie starts off with some voiceover, and it's over Eddie Redmayne's character. I don't know about you, but I have the sense that it was supposed to be him as a man looking back at this time in his life and telling you the story. It never occurred to me that it wasn't Eddie Redmayne's character in the future.
Yeah.
So then when it turns out that it's actually not his story, it's this other guy's story, and yeah. it allows your character to totally become a villain in the end, was really cool and unexpected.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just gonna say, like, I did expect her to not actually be doing magic. Like, I did think that it was her finding some real world sciencey way to deceive the people, but I didn't see anything basically after that. From like that point on, nothing after that did I anticipate at all.
Yeah, this is a movie of thwarting expectations. Although I did, and I'm getting again, we should probably step back and start talking about earlier parts of the movie. But there's a part where they get to the town. And they're like, welcome to the town. And I was like, aha, the Mars rule.
See?
If they're nice when you get to town, they're bad.
Right?
If they're mean when you get to town, they're good.
Because you meet all these dudes, right? When Sean Bean takes Eddie Redmayne back to his band of whatever, and they've all got the fucked up teeth, and they're like sharpening blades and like, you know, slicing their own fingers. Yeah. You're like, yep, sharp enough. And you're
on
like,
the fucking Iron Maiden.
Yeah. And you're like, all these dudes are bad news. Every single one of them would slit each other's throat for money, you know. But then when you get to, it's really dire times, and, you know, save for the one dude who tries to repent or whatever. But they're, like, legitimately, like, band of brothers.
Yeah.
Looking out for each other, upset when one of them gets killed. Yeah. And the one dude who's, like, you know, he's going to have to fight me to be the first to die.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're dying for each other. They're concerned about each other. Like, they are... the morally good group, but when you first meet them, they, you know, all their teeth are outlined in black, and they look all sketchy, and then, like, you know, the village people are all, like, clean and welcoming, and it's, again, like, the guys who looked sketchy in the beginning are the good ones.
If they're too friendly, Do not go in.
And now I'm wondering, like, if that's why I don't make very many friends. Because people are nice to me, and I'm like, what do you want? I'm not getting in that car with you.
Like, this guy with the black teeth, I'm on my way. Right? Move over, I'm getting in.
Did you tear the sleeves off your shirt and show up on a motorcycle? Here's my phone number. Well, and we talked about, like, oh, yeah, I thought he was... you know, Eddie Redmayne, but then when he's evil, I just wanted to be on the back of that horse, you know? Like,
So stepping back a little bit to earlier in the movie, I don't know why, but I am, like, obsessed with the Black Death. Like, I don't want to live through it. It's terrible, but there's something about it that is so, on a primal level, scary that I'm fascinated by it. Like, everything from the way the disease manifests itself with, like, the bubo, the big black bubo thing.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're called. I may be wrong, and then I'm going to have to edit all that out.
Yeah, the bubos.
Yeah, aren't they called bubos?
I have no idea.
Oh, I'm going to have to look it up. Okay, but from that to the aesthetics of the plague masks and just imagining, like, what it must have, that world must have just been like hell on earth. And I don't want to experience it.
Yeah. And I'm not obsessed with the Black Plague personally, but I get what you're saying, because it's one of those kinds of horror that's more like, I think it's worse than other kinds, because you either wait to die of the plague or you wait to not die of the plague. Like, those are your two options. And there's no, like, prevention. There's no getting away. There's no stopping it. You just wake up every day and wonder, like, is today the day I get the plague, or is today another day where I don't have it, you know? Because they didn't have...
I didn't make it up. Hence the name bubonic. Holy shit, that seventh grade flyer, actually.
But I think that's why it's such a more real horror than haunting movies or whatever. Because it's like, well, you get out of the house, you get out of the ocean, you know. Like, the movies always come up with the reasons why that doesn't work. But there's always that part of your brain that's like, we can get out of this somehow. But with things like disease, there's not really, especially in that time when it wasn't like, well, we'll just be extra clean and we'll wash our hands and we won't share straws. You know, they didn't have that knowledge. We'll
get everybody, all the animals will get some advantage.
Right. Like, they just had to keep going and just hope.
Well, I mean, that's why you turn towards superstition.
Yeah.
I think part of it is, it's the same reason I like dystopian or apocalyptic horror. But it's like a real life apocalypse, pre and post Black Plague.
Yeah.
It was like they went some sort of nuclear event. So, I mean, it has that same idea of just like surviving in this horrific event that just destroys the rules of society, like total breakdown of society.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not the best at history, so I might be getting this wrong, and I might be talking about the wrong plague, but there was, you know, I vaguely remember from middle school, high school, probably, that, you know, they were making all these, like, great breakthroughs in science and technology, and then the plague wiped out so many people and was such a huge, obviously something, like, priority one was dealing with the plague, that it was, like, it literally set humankind back several steps as far as, like, advancement went. We had to, like, do it again, because then, like, you know, everybody who had this knowledge was dead because of the bubos.
Right.
I can't.
Right.
That's my new favorite word.
Isn't that great? The bubos.
The bubos.
And they look like what they sound like what they look like. You know what I mean? It's not like a word, like, you're like scaffolding. You wouldn't imagine that scaffolding looks like scaffolding, but a bubo looks like a fucking bubo. Yeah, I mean, that's totally true. And it's crazy the way, I mean, yes, a lot of the smart people died and the knowledge went with them, and it's just replaced by superstition, because with lack of knowledge, like, there's tons of room to just immediately be superstitious.
Exactly.
And it had a devastating effect on
human advancement.
On knowledge, like, and human advancement.
We could have flying cars right now.
Right?
You know?
We'd be the Jetsons if it wasn't for fucking bubonic plague.
Right? So it actually was, like, it wasn't as globally devastating as, you know, fictional apocalypses were, but it's essentially an apocalypse that happened. Like, it reverted people back to, like, hunter-gatherer.
They call it the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a very good point.
I hate that. We could be the Jetsons right now.
We could be right now.
If it wasn't for fucking, what
we
was
could
it,
have a fleas? Silent air conditioner.
Fleas on rats or whatever.
Yep. Like, fucking A, man.
I, like, and I already hate fleas, but, like, I just...
Yeah, I don't like fleas.
Look what the fleas took from us. Right? My morning commute.
Kill all the fleas.
My morning commute could either be like tube technology where it's just seconds. Right? Or I could sleep during it because it would be automatic self-driving cars that actually self-drive and don't crash into buses. Or it could be, you know, true, air, like my flying car. Right? Right. Just, you know, whatever.
Or you could teleport.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe we don't have typical jobs in this space age world. Maybe there is no
money. We just live in a utopia where money does not exist, but all of our needs are met and we all work towards the betterment of mankind.
Exactly.
But then fleas.
But then fleas. Fucking fleas. And now I have to go to work at 6:30 in the morning and yeah, teach people how to use software.
Kiss boss ass and just terrible things.
Pay student loans.
Oh, student loans. Terrible. Yeah. Fucking fleas.
God damn, I blame the fleas for everything in my life now. I'm connecting everything to the fleas.
I think that's fair.
I got behind a tractor trailer on my way home today, and it kicked up a rock, and it cracked my windshield, and I'm blaming the fleas for that.
Is that true?
It's a little crack. It's not, like, huge, but it's probably going to do. It's
such a new car. It makes me
it's
sad.
It's so new, and now I have to get a windshield replaced because it's the kind that's going to grow. Yeah. I'm just – I don't feel bad blaming the fleas for all my problems.
Me neither. But, okay, so, please aside.
Anyway, so Sean Bean.
yeah, well, I was going to say that it's interesting that we look at these people that are in the Middle Ages, when Black Plague happened or whatever, and we laugh at how superstitious they are. But then you see things like when there are tragedies now, there is a certain part of the population that'll be like, it's the gays!
Right?
You know,
vaccines cause autism.
Right, so that part of, like, the human psyche exists today.
Yeah, we still are doing witch hunts. We're just, like, a little bit more political about it, but right, still not quite.
Trans bathroom laws.
All right. Oh, God.
So, yeah, so it's I'm, that's why I'm saying I'm just, like, super into the Black Death in theory.
Yeah.
I don't want it to come
no,
back.
No, not in, like, I'm super into Disneyland.
Yeah, I'm gonna pass on that.
Not like I really want to go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, because I do.
Oh, my God, yes.
And that, I want that to be my reality.
A butterbeer. That's, like, a thing you can get there. But,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
We're going to get off track again.
Yeah.
And our brains are going to cook in this heat if we don't get through this.
That's probably what's happening. This is a recording of us as we drift into insanity because our brains are boiling.
So I think this movie is gorgeous too. Mm-hmm. It's sort of weirdly small movie in that it's not like this grand epic. It's like this small story of this group of people.
Yeah.
And part of the way they do it is they make the world feel super claustrophobic by, like, shrouding it in fucking fog and
nighttime. Forest.
And it's really
yeah,
intimate and creepy. And, like I said, claustrophobic in a way that just sort of builds the tension as you're going deeper and deeper into, like, the superstitious remote world.
Yeah.
Like, you start off in the town, which is bad news because it's just, like, bodies covered in buboes
yeah,
and people self-flagellating and whatever. And then they go out into the forest and where everyone's gone savage in the woods and
yeah,
are, like, killing people as they come along. But I think one of the coolest visuals and most sort of unsettling moments is when they get to the river and there's a group of, I guess they're, like, I don't know what you would call them, like, pilgrims? I don't even really know, but there's, like, a group who are, like, self-flagellating.
Oh,
like,
and they're carrying the giant cross.
They're carrying a giant cross and whipping themselves.
Yeah.
You know, based out of just absolute terror of a world that they cannot understand, that has just fucking turned into a hellscape. All these things that they do to survive, but it's just such a, like, a, it was just such a cool moment in the movie when they come out of the mist. And it's just, it's like, such
yeah,
a perfect example of, like, the Dark Ages.
Well, and it's that whole, like, you hear them
yeah,
before you see them. And it's the guy without a tongue who's, like, yeah, trying to wake everyone up because he's like, someone's coming.
Yeah.
And it the point that it made for me was that this is a legitimately hopeless world.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's nothing left but to cut ourselves open and hope for the end, kind of, you know, like they...
Right.
This was not a repentance thing. This is not them being like, maybe God will take mercy. This is them being like, no, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, shit's fucked.
Well, like, and that they will do anything.
Yeah.
To like, they'll hurt themselves. Just if there is any chance of mercy, you know what I mean? From
yeah,
like, from an outside force.
Just grasping at straws. Oh, just man, like, what else can I do? Do you want me to, like, pull my own fingernails out and, like, well, then will you stop the plague? Like, you know.
Yeah. And the response of the people that see them how yeah. it's just sort of like they check them out and they're like, okay, they're not a threat, but yeah. they don't have a response that would be like, if we saw that shit, we'd be like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
But that is the world that they live in, where seeing something like that is just really not that shocking anymore. Yeah.
And that's like, and you know, aside from that whole like disease fear that I talked about, where like you can't get away from it, you just have to wake up and either you have it or you don't.
Either
and every
God
day,
has punished you or he hasn't. Yeah.
And every day is either you have it or you don't.
That was a moment that I really liked the movie, because yeah. I feel like it set the stakes for the world. And it also kind of shows them passing out of like what sort of passed for civilization into this world of just pure superstition yeah. and savagery.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get any better, which is why when they get to this, like, so they travel through, they need him there because he is the only person that knows the way through what
the
is
swamp.
It? Yeah.
Or whatever.
Because he grew up nearby or whatever. Yeah. And so when you get to this town, and it's crazy because they're like shrouded in all this darkness until you get to the actual village, and then it's like bright and sunny, and the water is clear and beautiful, yeah. and everyone is clean.
The streets and are friendly, tidied, like they're not full of trash and bodies and right. stuff.
Like everywhere else, it's like pits of like burning.
Yeah. Dead well, and they bodies. Changed the color temperature too, because yeah. before that everything Good was call. Like blues, and uh-huh. then we got to the village, and all of a sudden everything's like oranges and yellows, and like it's that warmer color temperature that makes you feel comfortable mm-hmm. again, even though. You know, it's been daylight in other places too, but yeah. they just.
But it's just like this little oasis of like yeah. life and light.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they get there. People are friendly. They invite them in. But we find out that Sean Bean is the second group that the bishops have sent to discover, like, because this town, the reason they go to this town specifically and they think there's a necromancer there is because it is like one of the only, it's like the only place that has not only like. Done well in the plague, like, you know, had a high rate of survival, but they literally have not had a single case
yeah.
of the plague there, which everywhere else is being struck down and ravaged by yeah. the plague. So this stands out. So they automatically assume there must be some like witchcraft yeah. afoot.
Right.
And it doesn't help when they get there and there's like, you know, Melisandre putting magical herbs in people's cuts.
She's like showing up in red dresses again.
Right. It does a good job also. You're like, because as the audience, you think you're smarter than the movie. So you're like, oh, she's a witch. Yeah. Although you apparently didn't. You
I
were
did not.
You were actually not. The movie was not smarter than me. It was, you were smarter than, wait, did I say it wrong again?
My
the
brain.
Movie was smarter than me, but not smarter than you. God, my brain really is cooking like a fucking yeah. scrambled egg. Mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was like, they're definitely setting her up to be a witch, right?
Right.
I thought that's the kind of movie that I'm watching, is that she's going to be a witch. And it didn't occur to me like, oh no, we're going for realism here,
right.
which is stupid because everything up until that point has been very realistic. Although it's interesting, it kind of puts you in the, as an audience member, because you think you're watching a movie that's going to have some magic in it. It puts you in the place and the mindset of the people that are in the movie, that you're in a world where magic exists.
Yeah.
And then it says, no, you superstitious dork, it is not that world. Yeah. She's actually not a witch. She just understands a little science.
And how human psychology works. Well, but that's why I thought it was going to turn out that she wasn't a witch, and she mm-hmm. was just using, you know, basically botany to look like a witch. Because in my head, I was like, well, but this is a real world yeah. situation. This is not, there is no magic that yeah. is letting her do this.
I've just watched too many crappy Nicolas Cage of the Middle Age movies. I don't know. I'm like, yeah. if Vin Diesel were here, there would definitely be witches.
Like, I'm not tainted yet. I still...
Stay that way.
Yeah. But I did like when he goes into the shed to see his girlfriend, and she's been, quote unquote, brought back from the dead. She, and it says before the witch is exposed as not being a witch. I thought it was interesting the kind of disorientation that she had, because a lot of the times in these movies you have, like, you know, people come out of the pet cemetery and they're evil. People yeah. come back as zombies. People come back as monsters and things. But this was, like, a really ambiguous...
Yeah.
She's obviously not okay, but you don't really know how she's not okay, you know? Like, it's one of those, like, she came back across the veil, apparently, yeah. and she's obviously upset.
She's, like, changed.
It's yeah.
like, If you're buying into the witchcraft part of it, right. like a dumbass like me, and I'm sure there are other people out there, God, I hope so. like, it looks like, yeah, she's come back from the other side and has come back wrong, pet cemetery
right.
style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's, like, stabbing at walls and stuff, but not even, like, super violently. She's just, like, kind of half-heartedly stabbing things a little bit,
yeah.
you know? But then when it turns out that she's not a witch and she was just drugged and unconscious and then healed, like, it gets weirder almost than if she had actually come back.
I wanted to go back and I didn't have a chance, but did she have a head wound?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe she had, like, some sort of, like, brain damage.
Yeah.
Which he interpreted to be...
coming back from... Yeah, no, I think that's interesting, is that it was probably something that was actual medical science. Some
sort of brain trauma or something.
Bleeding in there.
But in that world, that just translates into
superstition. She came back from the dead and she's not okay. Yeah. Like, well, he interpreted it as she's in purgatory. Like, she's caught between the worlds, and he kept saying she's in purgatory. She was in purgatory. And really, she just probably had, like, a major concussion and some sort of swelling.
Right? I mean, she probably won't go and make it anyway. But still, it's pretty fucked up to think he put the knife in her.
Yeah. And she, I mean, because she wasn't speaking either. And she was just throwing up, which is concussion. That's like concussion
stuff. Yeah.
And,
like, the rolling with the eyes and stuff. Like they could have been, like, seizures or something. Yeah. I mean, she was clearly fucked up, but she wasn't undead.
She wasn't undead, exactly.
Yeah.
But this made me think of something that I actually didn't think of before until, like, just this moment in time, that it's really interesting to have written a character during a witch hunt who is not a witch but is trying to make everyone believe she is.
Yeah.
When every other living person is doing the exact opposite, whether or not they actually are a witch, they're trying to convince everyone that they're not, you know, and this is the one person in all of Europe, if not the planet, who's ever during a witch hunt been like, I am witch.
Fuck, leave it to Melisandre to leverage, like, superstition to her advantage. Because, I mean, it's basically kind of the reverse, right? Like, whereas everyone blames the bad things that are happening to them on the witch.
Yeah.
She manages to make the fact that, I mean, it's really just that they're remote. I'm sure she doesn't understand that. There's some history there that they don't really go into, but they hint at that the church has been responsible for the death of her husband.
Right.
That she's able to leverage that and turn that into her power is keeping them safe. So that the people that would be first in line to burn her in other circumstances are the people that are going to rally around and protect her when these other people, they're willing to renounce their own faith and buy into her.
In a world where being Christian is just what you are. Right. Like, that's not...
It's
not a choice.
No.
You are as much Christian as you have blood in your body and are alive and use air and things. Like, that's just... And she somehow has psychologied these people into not only believing she's a witch, but being supportive of being a witch.
That's pretty dope.
That's... Yeah.
Like, hats off to her.
That is ballsy.
Yeah.
Like, that is some bold moves. And I did like, though, that, you know, the whole thing when she's, like, torturing and killing Sean Bean and his friends, that the whole thing is they're like, you need to renounce your God and all this. And they're like, we'll never renounce our God. But it didn't seem preachy. Like, the movie never felt like God is the answer. It was literally just a vehicle to get Sean Bean's arms ripped off.
Right.
It was just the reason to make things happen, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I also felt that it felt very true to the period.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't feel like it was preachy. It's not like a bunch of people who met on Christian Mingle and are like, we will never run out. Like, it is in an era where that is historically pretty on point.
Yeah.
Where people are so, especially living in fear all the time and seeing, like, these are true believers and, like, necromancy and things like that. Like, you cling to your faith because you are powerless in a world, in that kind of world, except for if you have a higher power, right?
Right.
So yeah, it didn't. And as someone who has a pretty intense radar when it comes to preachiness, it was not a problem for me. Which is why, except for when we got to the part where he's like, oh, he's back, he's safe, he's with God. I was like, oh, really? This is going to be like that? Really? And then,
that's what I thought, too. I thought that it was basically, and then he starts into the second part of his voiceover, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is it. He's going to talk about how Eddie Redmayne went back to the church and renewed his faith or whatever, and, you know, haircut went off and did his whatever he's gonna do now. But not only was it not that, but it just all the juxtaposition was so good with his, like, hopeful speech next to young Darth Vader burning people alive.
I know, man, that ending is so good. It's real good. So what did you think about the Sean Bean reveal?
Did
you see that coming?
No.
Oh my God. I was like, are you a psychic?
No, I did not see that coming.
That was a good little twisty twist. When he was telling him to open his shirt. Mm-hmm. I thought he was trying to get him to get that knife that they used to stab under the arm that's like a painless death.
Yeah.
Like, I thought maybe that's what he was trying to get him to do, to be like, I'm not going to give in to them. Just fucking kill me.
Yeah.
So then when it turned out, it was like the reveal of the...
Boobos.
Yeah. That was... And that he had brought...
He had brought it with him.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. You think the name... So it gave, like, a new sort of meaning to the name of the movie. They're going in there supposedly... It's kind of an ironic thing, like, that they're actually going there to spread disease or to kill in a world where everybody's fucking dying.
Yeah.
They're like, let's throw some fuel on that fire. So there's one remote village that is untouched, and they, under the guidance of the church, brought that shit in and were like, justice is served. Here's some disease.
Right. They were, and he was a knowing smallpox blanket.
Oof. Man.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
I had to go back and rewatch that little bit, because I thought at first, like, because it didn't, I was so far from the assumption.
You're too busy going like, oh my god, when are his fucking arms gonna
rip off? Well, I thought it was like, because they were symmetrical on his sides, I thought it was like bones that had been dislodged because of the arm point. Because it never, I was so far from Sean Bean as a smallpox blanket that I didn't even, my first instinct was not to think that these were plague tumors, bubos. I didn't know the word bubos at the time.
They're the lymph nodes. Oh. They swell up and turn black and burst.
Gross.
Super fucking gross. And they do it on the neck and on the arm. Like, anywhere you have lymph nodes, basically, they could explode into buboness.
But then, you know, I went back and it was, you know, they were plague, whatever. But then it made me realize that he knowingly killed one of his men. Remember that? For having the swollen...
Oh, yeah.
Lymph node, even though he himself knew he had the plague and was probably the person.
Do you think he knew at that point?
I think so. Like, I feel like...
Yeah, I don't know what the incubation time is.
Yeah.
It's got to be more than a day, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, he had to have, like, some sniffles or something going.
Or, you know, he had to, you know...
You know it. You feel it.
You check yourself, you know?
Yeah. If you're living in a world full of buboes, like, I mean, I would have, like, bruises everywhere my lymph nodes are, because I'd be like...
You'd think, I know, right? Just constantly walking around, like, holding all of your lymph nodes and be like, Yeah, I feel like he knew, but, I mean, I just feel that way. I don't have, like, definitive examples of how he knew, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's somebody who has nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Although I thought it was interesting, too, that the one guy that repents, they still hang his ass.
Yeah.
They use it, they act like they're leaving to use it as justification for other people to.
Yeah.
But then they just hang him anyway. Because, like, what can you do? Like, if they're trying to protect their town.
Right.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying logic dictates.
No. But, and it
so
seems like.
Haircut was right. They're going to kill you anyway, homie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, oh, man, I think I'd rather, the guy that gets eviscerated.
Yeah.
That's a bad death, man.
The horse thing was just not great. You know?
Yeah, the horse thing was not good. That was not a good death.
No.
So I think in that scenario, the best thing you could hope for is a good old hanging.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And then how did the other guy die?
Well, it comes down to the bald-headed guy and Prince Valiant, and they get the knife that Eddie Redmayne takes after he stabs his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And they cut themselves free, and they get out while Sean Bean is revealing the fact that he has the plague.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of go on a rampage, because Eddie Redmayne takes off after the witch, right?
And right. And, like, they have that conversation in the mists, which is amazing.
That was so well done.
Yeah.
I really loved it. But the other two stay, and they start murdering people, and then bald-headed guy gets stabbed by the one dude who greets them. The big guy.
Oh, right. Hob?
Yeah.
All right. So would you recommend this movie?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Me
too. It was real good.
I would recommend it to anybody who likes horror or... Mm-hmm. If you're someone who likes historical drama or high fantasy, like, really across the board.
Yeah.
It's a winner.
Yeah. And, you know, Sean Bean, Eddie Redmayne.
Right? And his tonsure.
Yeah.
Of sexiness.
Oh, my God.
All right. So what would you drink with this movie?
So with this movie, I felt like it was an Angel's Envy movie.
Oh.
Not just because the name makes it a little bit more, you know. But because Angel's Envy is, I think, anyway, a sweeter bourbon than some things.
And it has a little bit of a winey flavor.
Yeah,
to it.
Yeah. The reason why I thought of a sweeter bourbon for this is because whenever I think of the plague, I think of those plague masks that they would keep, like, satchels of herbs in to block the smell of death.
Uh-huh.
And so it makes me think of those, like, sickly sweet kind of... It's not disgusting, but it's somehow disgusting at the same time. So the word sweet kept coming to me. So I was trying to come up with a sweet bourbon.
No, and this is great.
Angel's Envy is what I thought of. I think consumed in any way, whether it's mixed with something or not. My personal favorites are either straight or with, like, soda water, but, you know, to each his own. Because I like tasting the bourbon. That's why I don't like mixing it with, like, Coke or anything.
So did you like Angel's Envy when you had it?
I did, yeah. Okay. It's not something that I would drink all the time because it is a little sweet for me, but it's a nice change from, like, you know my favorites, Bullet and Buffalo Creek
Bullet
and all those.
What I was drinking on Friday. That's what I had.
And then it feels like there's a bullet in your brain for a while later.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then 2 days later, you're loading that gun again.
Yeah, you are. I think this is your best pairing so far. I'm super into
it. Thank you. Usually I kind of have to think about what I would pair and why and all this, but this one came pretty quickly to me. So I feel pretty solid in it.
I like it. Yeah. Okay, so I was talking on Twitter with one of our listeners. Her name's Emily from Portland, I think.
Huh.
Yeah, so the place of your peoples. And we were talking about beer. Mm-hmm. And I told her she basically said she really likes the beer pairings she enjoyed, or your drink pairings.
Oh, yeah.
She actually had a blog where she did beer pairings with movies.
Oh.
So I asked her what she would pair with Black Death.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me that she would definitely a German Schwarzbier.
Ooh.
Schwarzbier. From the oldest brewery you can find. That's awesome. Yeah. Like, if you're not a bourbon drinker, like, if you're a beer drinker, I'd go Emily's direction. If you're a bourbon drinker, I would definitely go your direction.
I feel like Emily's direction, like, something that came out of a wooden cask, you know?
Well, that's the other thing, is, like, the Angel's Wing, or what is it?
Angel's Envy.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the sort of D-baggy
the bottle.
it's aged in port barrels. So that's kind of casky, right?
Barrels.
Barrels.
The theme of this episode is barrels.
So, like, your pick was good, and it was even better. You know what I mean? Like, it's perfect. That was a good one. I like that. I
feel really good about this.
I feel really good about it, too. And I also think it's a good fucking bourbon, so.
Yeah.
People are going to have a good time.
That is a good bourbon.
Much like watching this movie, if you drink Angel's Envy, you will have a good time.
Yeah. Like, I enjoyed...
Until you're having a bad time.
I enjoyed 12 Days of Terror, but, like, I legitimately liked...
Yeah.
You know, this movie. Like
you're like, I'm enjoying this and it's good.
Yeah. Like, I actually would probably... I might watch this again at some point, depending on how long it stays on Netflix.
Right. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yay! That was a good one. All right, so, quickly, feedback. So... Like with Emily, I recommend that people get in touch with us because we love to hear from our listeners. We got one piece of feedback this week. It is not a recording. It is not an email. It is an image. This is from our good friend from last Horrorcast, Scott, who last time left us that awesome message.
Oh, okay.
And was joking about how he wished that he could send us a video. Well,
of the shark that was hiding.
It's not a picture of the shark that is hiding. But it is something I think that you will appreciate. I feel like, I mean, it was sent to me, but I feel like it might be directed to you.
I feel really, there's a very dubious air about this.
Is it the look on my face?
It is. It's mostly entirely the look on your face.
Okay, so I'm going to hand this to you and we can listen to your reaction in real time.
Yeah, I mean.
You want to describe it for our listeners?
It is an image of a scuba diver.
Who I believe is probably Scott.
Who is probably Scott. And it's been photoshopped with a CB.
One of the dark creations to come from Mars' mind.
I mean, you know, I give the guy who wrote Saw so much crap about being like, you're a scary human or whatever, but I came up with CBs. So I really, I'm same boat. The idea of bees underwater, you came up with the name, which is such a good name, but I did dream up
you did
the
so
horror
do,
of
does
the CB
the horror of the CBs in reality live up to the horror of the CBs in your mind?
I mean, I think so.
What do you think happens 5 seconds later in this picture?
Well, the stinger goes directly into his heart in much a Steve Irwin way, and then just dies and struggles, and he just, you know, thinks about the things that he never accomplished with his life, and
has undersea anaphylactic shock.
Yeah, and then sinks into the cold abyss. where he's probably eaten later by a million microscopic shrimp creatures.
I love the text on here too. Stream Queens. Stream Queens podcast. Your home for CBs.
Your home for CBs.
All right. Touche, Scott. Well played, sir. Well
it's like
played.
If we were at high school, we'd be the Fighting CBs.
Fighting CBs. That's going to be our new mascot.
Yeah.
The Fighting CBs. I actually really love this. This made me laugh a lot. And this is the thing, is I get these things and then I have to hold on to them for several days before I can show them to you. So I'm quietly cackling to myself, but it is fun to finally get to reveal them. But there's a lot of like in the in-between time. Just be like,
but yeah, no, I get
like,
that.
When
cause
you walked in the door, the first thing I wanted to do was scream CB. So I want credit for my like small amount of maturity.
No, and I get, because you and I are both the same where we're like, we buy someone a birthday present. And then it could be like a matter of, I could buy it on my way over to see this person. And it's like, the only reason why I haven't texted them what I got them is because I'm like currently driving or something. Like right. I'm the worst at that stuff.
I know. I'm like, oh, I like if I buy a gift in advance, I'm like, I'm so smart. And then all I want to do is give that gift and be like, I'll get another one.
Right.
Because I'm so excited. I just want to see that person's face.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about when we get awesome feedback from our awesome listeners is I'm like, I want to just give it like, and I mean, there have been times where I've almost sent you things and I'm like, no, wait, it'll be better in person.
Yeah. Well, and like, you know that I have the struggle because there's always things like when we worked together or when I came over, I'm like, I've been saving this all week. Like, I'm like, the door hasn't even shut behind me before I'm like flipping through my phone. I'm like, I've been waiting all week to show you this picture. Hang on.
I remember we worked together and I would like have work from home days and you'd be like, I've been saving this for 3 days.
And you decided not to come to work today. Or like you would come in and you'd like open your laptop and I'd like immediately just start Skyping you all these links and be like, I've been saving this since last Wednesday. Just start at the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. So now you're getting a little payback.
Yeah.
Because now it's me struggling.
Yeah.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Scott, for your evil photo. That it will be fuel for all of our nightmares and is now the show mascot.
Yep.
If, like Scott, you want to send some feedback, we would love to hear from you. There's tons of ways to do that. You can either send us an email at rachel@zombiegirls.com. You can find us on Facebook, like our page, and communicate with us there. You can find us on Twitter at ZG Podcast. And you could leave us a voicemail or a text message at 1-678-694-7759. I said that fast, so please feel free to go to the website and check it out there. And if you just want to show some love, you don't necessarily want to communicate with us. One way that you can support the show is to leave us a review on iTunes. We do check those. So if you do, we'll be happy to thank you personally. And it would mean a lot to us. Helps us, you know, get out there so that other people can find us. So we'd love to hear from you. Send all of your strange questions to Mars. You must pick her brain. Trust me, it is a dark and wonderful world.
It might get weird, but there are things. I'll say things.
But I like it weird.
I can say things.
Do it for me. Yeah. I want to hear what she'll say.
I like it weird. Do it for me. Do you know how long I've been waiting for someone to say that to me?
You're welcome. All right. So that's basically it, except for what are we watching next week? It's your,
okay.
It's your turn again, sir.
So.
Ma'am. It's your turn again, ma'am. Don't look at me like that. What is going to be our show next week, Ms. Mars?
So the movie that I picked, I actually had a thought process that I went through. Ooh. For this, because I realized that we watched 12 Days of Terror that had Gimli, then we watched Black Death that had Boromir.
Oh shit.
So I was trying to find another movie that had another Lord of the Rings actor in it, because one of my best friend from high school and I, we lived together for a while in Portland, and we used to play this game. It was like a constantly ongoing, like I think we like technically played it for like a year or something, where one of us would pick a movie and we'd watch it, and then the next person would pick a movie, but there had to be a connecting actor.
Oh, that's
right?
Fun.
Yeah, so I am kind of playing this game. So you're just lucky that as of June 1st, The Faculty is no longer on Netflix, because it was up until June 1st. I fucking love that movie.
I love that movie. That movie is underrated. That movie is real
love
good.
The Faculty.
Okay.
And I just watched it like a month or two ago. Like,
it's real. I actually watched it the other day too. Yeah, I would have watched it again though, because that movie's good.
I love that movie, and I think it is really underrated. And it keeps getting lumped into those like early 2000s teen scream horrors.
Which it is a fucking wasteland of shit, but that movie is good.
That movie is good. Anyway, that movie is no longer on Netflix, or at least I couldn't find it, and my weird Netflix wouldn't let me see it or something.
Probably.
So. It came down to two, okay. And I'm not going to tell you what the one I didn't choose was, because I'm going to probably choose it again at some point. Okay. I just am feeling more for this movie. It's called Grand Piano, and it stars Elijah Wood.
Okay.
So we get a little Frodo.
Okay.
And it's about, he plays a pianist who's got stage fright after an incident or something, and he is trying to get back into being a pianist, and then he gets contacted. Basically, I just read the synopsis on the Netflix, and he gets contacted by a sniper who says that he will shoot him if he misses a note. During his next live performance.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got like a 71% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's exciting.
So it's apparently pretty good. And
that's solid.
Elijah Wood.
I love Elijah Wood.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know. Have you seen it?
I feel like I saw part of it maybe, but I'm like ready to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that sounds solid. Yeah. I'm excited.
And this is why I texted you last night where I was like, would you call psychological thrillers horror? Because that's what it's labeled as, a psychological thriller. And I watched the first like 6 or 7 minutes. There's honestly like 4 minutes worth of opening credits. Like, it's okay. Just like words like appearing over close-ups of piano parts, you know, like for like,
sounds scary.
For,
I'm
like
into it.
4 minutes. But okay. It's very like, it's got a very horror feeling to it in the beginning where it's okay. Like just scenes of regular things happening, but it's got like, you know, kind of weird music and like.
Does it have like a Hitchcockian sort of vibe?
Kinda, yeah.
All right, that
yeah.
Counts. I'm into that.
So that's what I'm going with.
All right, Grand Piano, yeah. It is. Nice choice.
Thank you.
I'm excited, and I like this little connecting game. Truthfully, I mean, there's only so many horror movies on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. You got to start adding some extra levels.
Like that's why I said like we review horror and horror adjacent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think especially if you look at what counts as a thriller on Netflix, they're like The Exorcist thriller.
I know. Well, and I, you know how after you watch something, it's like if you liked this, you might like this too. And I finished watching like. It was a horror movie of some sort, some haunting movie or whatever, and it was like, if you like this, you might like Pee-wee's Funhouse. So Netflix does some
Netflix
weird.
Netflix is crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, well, I guess that's it for this week. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. You know, I love this. Even in 90-degree weather.
I know, it's humid.
I still have fun talking to you.
It's humid AF in here, and it's still fun.
Yeah, that says a lot about
us. I know.
We must really enjoy each other's company because
right.
It is balls.
Especially
in here.
Since, like, probably I'd guess a good 20 to 30% of the humidity is our own breath at this point.
Gross.
Yeah.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everybody.
Speaking of disease movies,
why don't you take us out, Mars?
What?
Bye, everybody.
I used to, and I still actually have this paranoia. I don't know what it comes from because I've never come across a dead body before. But as a kid, and even like I said, even now, but I just like, I handle it better. I have this paranoia that when I see someone sleeping that they're actually dead.
Really?
So as a kid, whenever my mom just wanted to take a fucking nap, I would like come into the room and like really quietly just like put my hand over her mouth and nose to be like, are you breathing?
And was she like, why are you trying to kill me?
Well, she just, like, initially she was like, oh my, like, are you okay? What's wrong? And I was like, oh, I was just making sure you were breathing. And then I saw some movie, like, I was like 5 or 6 or something. And I saw in some movie, like, you know, when you put the mirror.
Yes.
So then I started bringing her, like, hand mirror out of the bathroom and, like,
putting
it against her face. And she would, like, and rightly so, would get so mad at me.
Of course.
She just wanted to take a damn nap.
No.
And I was completely fine. Like, she, you know, she'd set me up and whatever. Be like, if you need anything, come in and get me, blah, blah, blah. And I would, like, wait until she was asleep. And then I'd have to, like, check her breathing.
How old were you?
I was pretty young. I was like 5 or 6 or something. And I, like,
most kids don't understand the concept of death. You were like, not only understood it, but you were like sure it was happening all the time. You were a dark fucking kid.
Yeah.
Like, Like, if I feel like a thermometer and, like, the temperature is now at eye level, the mercury is like, meh.
I'm starting to, like, give in to the slow talk and, like, I was not drunk, but we need to get humid in here, you know?
It's fucking hot. Okay. Yeah.